Guys, we're taking this podcast professional because that's what we are.
We are
And
professional.
that's the number one compliment our band has gotten over the years.
Professionalism.
I'll do it the right way. Professional. Now, me and Matt were just talking about that. Part of the thing, like even like with my business, a la carte, shipping, I'm getting into printing t-shirts, all this stuff, you know, shipping management, merch management.
Right.
One of the things that is good about my business is I know what it's like to be in a band, and I know what it's like to have to work with big industry people. Matt made this point the other day, like the big companies, they're just not flexible, and they are trying to business for them that offers a product to you, as opposed to like, I know, like I work with, you know, King's K or Us or, you know, Valhalla, almost talking to some new bands too. And it's just cool when I think about, oh, wait, I know exactly what it's like, everything they're going through. And if I can just make a few things easier, that makes me flexible, then allows them to be flexible too. It's really good. So,
you know, it's not flexible is professionals. They're actually not, I mean, it will be a 21st century professional skill to be more flexible, but being professional, I see as, you know, bad. I mean, not bad, but if you can be better than professional is real. Professional is pretending to be something often, because if you hear the jargon and the, like, if Toby's trying to get a client and he goes, "Oh, I'm handling a client. I need to be professional." And I was like, "Don't. You're an artist. Right. If you're talking to another artist, all you got to do is be their brother as an artist. Of course, I know something because I do it. I don't know, but yeah, I can do whatever because I'm like you, and we know stuff. So we do stuff, and I can do this thing. You can do this thing. We'll work together. That's not that, you know, somebody who has a company with a mission statement that we're here to serve the art in, you know, like that's professional, I guess, but that's not good. It's less good. Right. It's not as good. Professional is, I don't know, not as good.
Speaking of professional, your office is looking pretty professional right now.
It's not professional.
Well,
I'm not going with that word. I mean, I'm using that word as a placeholder for things.
There's a chair
like,
between the two curtains over there. That looks a little professional.
There's a chair, a professional chair.
A professional chair.
That's what a professional would do, actually.
It's positioned right in the professional spot.
It's a nice profession.
Funny. You said you're going to have a conference table. That's professional.
I shouldn't use the word conference.
Conference table is what you use. That's the first thing that came to mind.
That is
what you said. Wow. Shit.
No, but
you know
a table.
Hold on,
a table.
Hold on. You actually are a professional.
No.
Yes, you are. You son of
you
a bitch.
Might be
you
the been, most professional.
That's exactly what a professional
would
do.
Yeah, I know. I know.
There's no one more professional than Matt Carter.
Listen, I'm going to just be bold about what I know about myself. I'm beyond professional. I'm not yet. It's not that I'm not yet a professional. Oh. I'm above that. I understand professional. I'm actually above it. And I'll go so
far. You're a BP?
Okay?
He's
I'll
BP.
Go so far as to say that when it's a
Matt Carter BP.
Beyond professional.
Please start using the letters
business
after
cards.
Your name.
Matt Carter BP.
I'm practicing this thing where I'm trying to figure out how to not be. I want to be able to say good stuff about myself that's true without it being the bragging thing. You know what I mean? Like that line between that is right. But you can't. You have to know. You have to be able to actually admit if you're good at something in a real way.
Yeah.
Somehow. But I'm saying, so I'm going to say beyond professional, I'm going to do another one too.
Here we go.
You know, it might be seen that I'm less than professional or whatever, but the people that might misunderstand that, good for them. That's their lack of understanding. Also, there's the spiritual equivalent of that too, where it's like, if you go out there, you can find people who will say that we are shitty at stuff like, bad Christian is bad, like that same thing when we say bad Christian, and they go, yeah, because you're not good. That's your whole point is being bad. And
you're
what's good
that.
Is the church and the way that that works, the systems and the institutions and that, those things that I actually do find to be arrogant. And I think there's a more way of saying there that I would say that I'm beyond that normal level of institutional church. I would say beyond, not like, oh, I checked it out and now I'm anti-spiritual or anti-God or anti-Bible or anti-Jesus. No, no.
But you're beyond
graduated
religion.
Church is a way to say it, but it's
beyond
like, I know
religion.
What I am beyond that. It's just
so
what I am. I'm not
so
saying it's the right way.
You're beyond professional,
yep.
Beyond religion,
Beyond what church, else are you? Yeah. Beyond, I don't know about religion.
Okay, BC,
good...
B. Okay, so you're BC, BP. Mm-hmm. What else?
Let's see. What else?
You got to have another one.
You got to have another beyond level of something.
The beyond parent.
Oh.
Beyond parent.
Beyond parent. That's another BP.
Or beyond authority.
It's beyond. It's just, and it's not for everybody. Like, it's just the way that I am is like, I've taken what I can from these things, and then I'm going on my path that is past that. But it's for me, it's not the way. But if you think there's a way to be the right, good kind of parent, church, or professional, I think you are short-sighted. There's beyond that for you, but it looks different for everybody when you get to the beyond. And my way of being beyond professional, I'm not expecting other people to understand it.
I'm going to make you a plaque that says Matthew DeBose Carter.
It's just having your own path. That's what it means.
B A B dot A comma B dot P comma.
I'm already printing the shirt.
Those are my credentials. Yeah, those are my
credentials. It's going to be on the door of the your new office on your conference table.
It's just you like the things, and then you can raid from everything that's good. You can learn from it, and then you don't have to stick to it. It's like in music, you know that's what we are. You know that's what we are musically.
We're beyond.
Learn the rule. You went to college to study music theory. You didn't stick to that. Good God! You just immediately went beyond it. You learned it. You loved it. You absorbed it. Music theory, and then you started doing everything beyond it.
Yeah.
Right.
That's probably just what most.
That's what's interesting about music that always blows my mind is there's all these rules, and then everybody, as soon as you kind of break one or do something that isn't in the norm, it makes everybody go, ooh,
that was
really smart. That was smart. When you do the thing that's not the rule, you go, wait, and everybody goes, oh, you can do that? Well, I don't know. It really is true. I think some people just really thrive within a rule system. Some people really thrive needing when all the details are there. You know what I mean? Like for a plan to come together, they need all the details. And then
it's outside of them and it's not, like, it's not within them. It's outside of them and they conform to it and that feels secure for them. But I don't trust that the thing that it's coming from, I don't actually trust that only to a certain amount. I feel insecure.
It's interesting.
In that
way. Yeah. I was talking to Katie the other day and basically Katie was like, oh, you think that I, am in a cult following Matt. So I was like, no. I said, I don't think so. I do think Matt unintentionally sometimes goes guru. I think but I will say this, and I told this is exactly what I told Katie. I said, no, I don't actually believe that. I said, Matt's helped me maybe one of the most in my whole life, for sure.
It's just a tailor-made cult for one.
And I mean, you probably are in our cult too. Then, if that's true, then you're probably in the Toby cult.
Who else have I grown more from interacting with?
No, I know. I agree. That's what I'm saying.
That's the environment of my growth includes the leaders being people like you.
Right.
That's true.
Right. Yeah, because it's all.
Who else am I going to learn from? A guy with an influencer that is trying to sell me something.
Yeah, I agree. But it was interesting. I was talking to her about it, and it was funny because we started delving into then, like, it is wild. All three of us, there is something to be said. I know this sounds goofy. This sounds like I'm going really spiritual. There is something about the Trinity formation that, like, it is needed in business or the world. That's why sometimes I think the presidency is a little silly, like a three prong. Like, that's why, like, the U.S. is set up with three ways. Well, it's the legal, the
congressional, the judicial, legislative, and judicial.
Santa Maria, the Pinta, whatever it was.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, something like that. Santa Maria.
I think it was like that. And the judicial, all that. And I was like, you know, it's interesting. Us three bring qualities to Emory that makes it work and last and succeed. And sometimes those things can get in the way. Like, sometimes Matt's way too slow. Sometimes Devin's too fast. Sometimes I don't respond and hold everything up, or last minute come in and go, hey, what about this? And everybody's like, well, damn it, we've gotten this far. You know what I mean? Like, but all of those things together, like me by myself sometimes, that's why, like, I love working like with a la carte with Katie and Allison. Like, it's been so great bouncing off ideas. They catch stuff. They say stuff. Their strengths go, oh, and then I can do this or this, and it just works really good. But with Emory, it's really interesting. I've wondered that too. I think sometimes you see that in other successful bands as well. Like, Now, and it's not always three necessarily, but when there's at least a duo, and I'll mention
one, like, is the bad. Yeah. A single leader is the bad thing.
Right, yeah, like Hawthorne Heights. It is JT's the idea guy, but the other guys bring their specific skills in, and it works so well. How about August Burns Red? JB and Brent. Those two guys just really work well together, managing that band and handling it. And the other guys bring their strengths in, but you know what I mean? Like, as long as you have some back and forth and people doing it, it just really is interesting how it works. I think that's probably why it is hard for teachers. You're the only teacher in a class of like 30. That's, and like, if you had one or two other people with a little bit different personality, it just would, like, I think
absolutely
you solve so much of school if you actually did add extra teachers. Cause I've been substituting in classes where I was just like an assistant and there were still two or three other people and the class just goes so much better. There's people around and I was like, oh, I mean, I was like, this just has to be right. Cause it puts so much pressure on the teacher and they go, well, this is the way I have to run my class. Cause if not, it gets out of hand, and it does.
That's why throuple would be ideal for parenting, right?
Oh my God.
That's true.
In every way. Now that you say that, I didn't think about that.
One guy, two women. Yeah, only one guy, two women. Yeah. None of that other shit.
No, that's right.
Yeah. No, but
now, add more teachers, what would happen in the system is they would say, oh, now we can get a better ratio of one to X. And you would not get that. They wouldn't do the thing you're talking about,
and you don't
which is
that,
the right
though.
Thing.
What you need is, it's fine having the group, but all three are there working on the thing. The same way
because
as we work on
one kid
song,
does something that the person doesn't understand or hits them in a wrong way, they have to keep control of the class, and it's just them. So they have to make some decision to control the damn thing. But if you had another person, they might go, oh, he's just that because of this, and they could help run the interference, make it not turn into an authoritarian, this teacher has to control this class with no help. That's puts them in a bad spot. Because you know when you're a parent, you start to go yell at the kids, and like your partner goes, oh, and they see what really went wrong, but you're beyond your limits. All you can do is yell. But it could go either way. Right. It's not that the one parent yells. It's that somebody saw, oh, actually, I see the misunderstanding, and then the nuance can be present.
I was substituting this week. Maybe I told y'all this, but it was a first grade class. I was like, oh, first grade's going to be easy. I was only in there for 2 hours. I was like, oh, first grade, they're sweet. They're awesome. It's going to be amazing. Within 30 minutes of the class, the assistant principal had come. I had to send two little girls to the nurse because they'd gotten hit by thrown furniture. There was a big fight, and three other kids got sent home.
Jeez.
And there was just nothing I could do. Like, I was trying to control, but it was like, there is no control at this point. Like, it just, you do have to remove as many people. And I was like, oh, man. But the part of it was, I was there early. So this substitute, do I have to listen to a substitute? Who is this? It's not the teacher. And maybe I won't get in that big of trouble. It doesn't even matter. And the consequences aren't that bad. What's so funny is, sent three kids home. Like, they got suspended that day. Two other kids that had nothing to do with it goes, can I go too? They wanted to go home.
That's like,
why can I go home? Oh,
the suspended
so
punishment.
I get to go home if I do something like this.
Right. Yeah,
then I'm going to do something like this. Yeah, it's crazy. And then the next day, it's fifth graders, and they're the sweetest, nicest, best class you could ever have, and just nothing. And it's just like, wow. It's just,
you know, cops just have that on suspension too. They do something bad, they get paid leave.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Right.
Like, look, he's on paid leave because he did something bad.
I know. It's insane. So, I mean, there isn't much. I was really frustrated subbing this week because I was like, wow, the disparity is so crazy from one school to the next. It's just like, and there are kids that are trying to learn, and then there's kids that just shouldn't be there. I felt bad for the kids that were acting bad because the reason they're acting bad is they are not bad. I am enforcing rules that even I don't believe in. Sit quietly for an hour and use your computer or finish this paper or color. And then, like, it's zero creativity. Nothing. And so, of course, there's, like, angst within them. You know what I mean? Like, I felt so bad because I was like, the kids that got in trouble have the most personality. They are recognizing so many things in the room. Like, the idea that they're bad or not as smart because their grades don't reveal that. It's so awful. And honestly, I'll even say it. I think it most oftentimes hurts minorities. I really do think that. I think it makes oftentimes from the classes that I've seen, I'm like, wait, but don't you understand? Like these, they should, I don't want, I didn't try to send them to the office. I wasn't going to. I didn't ask anybody to come in the class. I'm like, this is my responsibility. If they're out of hand, I need to try to figure it out. And I don't want them to get in trouble. I do not want anybody to go to the office and get sent home. I didn't want that. I was like, this just reinforces all the negativity. And the kids that got sent home, I was talking to them. They're really smart.
Yeah, they're talking to me in ways
and making jokes and understanding stuff on a level that the smart kids in class aren't. And I'm like, wait, hold on. Can't we? And then it was just too late. It was like, oh, well, there's nothing here. And I was like, if I could just have taken these kids to the playground for a little bit and maybe just watched them for a couple of weeks and see how they interact, see what, like the same way as, I know this sounds, you know, we always make sports analogies. I believe when a coach goes, this quarterback or this wide receiver has this is where they really excel. I'm going to make our game plan work so that the things that they really excel in, they can do. And so they're going to feel great. And then they'll probably end up doing the little things too that I need them to do. You know what I mean? Like blocking or the stuff they don't want to, like a wide receiver doesn't want to block or any, you know, a tight end might not want to block. And I was like, huh, this is so interesting. Teachers have to follow these rules. And if they don't, they'll get in trouble. Like one of Ike's teachers told the class a week and a half ago, and she's like, she's been at the school for years and years, that she was let go because she was failing too many people. And she goes, and she tells them, that she said she wasn't keeping up with the rules because the school cannot let you fail people because they get less money. They get punished if you actually do the right thing. And she's saying, I gave them opportunity. I'm trying to have them improve their grades. If they don't, then this is what it is. And why can't they accept that? And it actually is true, but we're in such a weird system, not a weird system, an old system that was just the best we could do. And now here we are and everybody's like, wait, what am I doing? And especially, and then COVID just obliterated it.
Yeah. Can you imagine if you had assistant coaches in the room, or if you were an assistant coach, you could take two or three of those kids where you're sensing that thing brewing and you take them out on the playground, but the class could stay, but you take those four, say, let me take these four and see what's like, and then the class could continue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's what exactly, you know, if you could do that, you can't, one authoritarian person who, whatever, I mean, probably doesn't have that many skills necessarily in the interpersonal way. Maybe they think they're a good instructor. That's a skill. I mean, a coaching staff has a lot of different skills on it for a team. One is that, you know, they have lots of different skills.
Right. And you need them all. And that's what I'm saying. Like the way it's run, like, so one class I did not get, I was substituting a health class, no lesson plan or anything. So I was like, well, what am I going to do? And the teacher's like, oh, just take them outside. And I was like, whoa, it really is fascinating. I watched the boys, and the boys played basketball forever. They have so much energy and so much desire to play basketball that I was out there for almost an hour, and they never stopped playing pretty hard. And then it was really interesting watching most of the girls. Some of the girls played basketball as well, and then some of the girls and other boys broke off into groups, like playing games they created, like chase or this weird, you know what I mean, whatever it might be, games they were creating. And there was a couple of loners, and I felt my heart just breaks for them because I was like, I know what that feels like. You're walking around a playground by yourself, and people have friends, and you don't or something. But I just found it fascinating. I was like, man, if you could allow – these boys have so much energy, and they just let them do something they really are enjoying and are learning from. Like, it is good to get a bunch of exercise. Like, one of the most problems adults face is not exercising enough, right? So, like, if kids came out of school, just think about this. I was thinking, if kids just came out of school with they barely know English. They know just enough English and math, like, I'm just saying, like, they know enough to, you know, sign a check or write a paragraph. Just the basics. Just give them the basics. But they were just actually really understanding health and exercise, wouldn't they be already way better than what is now? You know what I mean? Because you don't use in your life the story of George Washington and the cherry tree, or he did it or he didn't, or whatever. You don't need to know the seventh president. You just don't need it. Now, what you do need is how to interact with other people and to be healthy mentally, emotionally, and physically, and all those things. And it's just crazy. Those things just get
pushed back.
It is funny because I coach Remy's little rec baseball team, and there's 14 kids on the team, which is a lot. And
it is a lot, actually.
I think three are third graders. Mm-hmm. Three are third graders, and there's a few second graders, and then Remy's in kindergarten. But they're the ones that can't listen the most. The third graders that I have are the ones that actually have a lot of difficulty paying attention.
Yeah.
And there's a second grader that's the same way. But I mean, there's two of them that I've realized. I mean, they actually they can't pay attention. You know what I mean? Like it's not that they don't want to pay attention. They can't.
They're not bad.
No, there's something in their brains that they just cannot. And there's one of the kids who, and occasionally they do something they're like rude or mean, and they get in trouble for that. And one of the kids, he was being mean to another kid, or he called him a name, or he did something. I said, why don't you go just have a seat for a few minutes and watch us while, you know, we're scrimmaging or doing whatever. He's like, I want to run laps. I was like, all right, run laps, go run laps. And he started running. He was probably three laps in around the baseball field, and he was exhausted already.
Yeah.
And he just, I saw his eyes kind of start tearing up a little bit. And I said, you want to keep running, or do you want to participate in a kind manner? Nice. He's like, I want to participate. And so he just kind of like grabbed his glove and went back, and he was better after that. But it wasn't anything I even did to him.
He got to choose. Is the point?
He chose I just want to. I'd rather run than sit down. I'm like, all right, go run.
And then he realized. Allowed him to make a choice, and then he realized, this wasn't the best choice.
Right.
You know what? I don't want to run 10 laps. I might just do what he says. Kinda. At least you know what I mean.
Like
you actually gained ground on him. Yeah.
Right. Because then he starts to understand. Like I'm not just telling him exactly what to do. Now, sometimes it's hard, man. Me and another coach, and they take you right to the edge sometimes. And when you're a coach, sometimes you feel a little bit more free to yell. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like not yell like mad, angry yell, but like, listen up, you know, pay attention. You know, it's just kind of like that because everybody's far away from you anyway.
Right.
And so, and the parents are there watching on the bleachers. Like they're just there watching.
Yeah,
you're just like, oh my gosh. They're just like
a collective in a sport environment, since they all want to be there, at least they might not want to do this task or that drill or whatever, but they do want to participate. They've opted in.
Right.
And for them, they don't want to be humiliated in the thing they chose. So the coaches can create a collective attention and you get called out, not called out, just pointed. If the collective attention exists and then a coach engages the one player about the one thing, then they understand, the parents and the other kids and the other coaches are all observing me being.
Yeah.
That, you know, they are going to pay attention. They're going to want to cooperate with that.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So if collective awareness can be non-judgmental and helpful, they're going to go along with it.
Right.
Well, I really was thinking that people hate it when you know, that's why I always really appreciated it. It was the first person I really ever heard of it. Like Cesar Millan was like, it's not the dog's fault.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not the dog's fault. The dog actually wants to actually please you and wants to be a part of your pack and wants you to be the leader. Like the dog wants that, right?
Right.
And we aren't that far off. We are smarter than dogs, more intelligent. But I mean, the way, like, it makes
who don't want to fit in and belong somewhere.
It makes so much sense to me that, like, not that long ago, before you went to school, you might have had a bunch of stuff you had to do, like chores, like really like milk a cow or like real physical things. And then you went to school and there was real consequences. Like, oh my God, if the teacher talks to my dad, it'll be scary. Like I was scared of my dad, even me, much less. Like I can't imagine like my pawpaw and his dad. You know what I mean? Like what? Like the threat of whatever that was going to be. I'm not saying that the threat is healthy, but the actual like kids now. Like I know I see it with my kids. Like when we actually are active, they just are better. Like when I let them sit on video games for too long. Like I'm not opposed to video games. I love it. I think it's great. But I see that the same way as I see Dottie, my dog, when I don't take her for a walk, she's worse. She tries to get attention sometimes. She'll tear something up just to get attention. You know what I mean? Like she's tearing a pillow up because she actually wants me to interact with her, even if it's negative. And maybe the kids are even the same way. They're like, wait, I need something. So they're being even negative sometimes. And they have so much energy that we just don't expel. Like I guarantee you, if every kid went to school and the first 2 hours were physical activity, not harsh, I'm just saying physical activity, I guarantee you, you could do 2 hours of education. It would be better than the 7 hours that they do. Just say that when you have to tell, okay, sit down, be quiet. Now, so why is the kid flipping around in their chair? Because they have energy. They need to get it out. That's what you actually have to do. Why would you have energy sitting inside of you and you can't stop it? And then you have to stop it because you don't have control of yourself. That's not that. It's that you actually have it. And so it's there and it just, you got to do it. I mean, leaning back. I mean, there's so many kids lean back in their chairs.
Oh, I know.
You know what I mean? It's because the chair is able to be leaned back and that feels nice and it's good. It's not evil or bad. It feels nice. And sometimes you slip and fall.
Yeah, they're not even trying to do anything wrong. Like, I've noticed that a lot recently with River, my middle son, if other people don't know that. But he's 9 years old, and he has an extremely high amount of energy. And there's sometimes, like, in the morning or, like, before bed or whatever, and I know everybody's kids are kind of like this, and they get crazy at different times of day or whatever, but it's like I'll watch him, and he's doing these things that are somewhat annoying to me. They're sounds, or they're hitting or touching or doing this thing. Yeah. And he's back and forth. Like he'll get up off the couch. He grabs a blanket. He'll fall back down on the couch. You know, he's like, he's just like doing this thing. And I'll catch myself saying, River, stop or whatever. And I'm like, wait a second. He's not doing anything wrong.
Right
now. He's just being a little bit annoying to me for whatever that is. So I have to tell myself, like, don't be annoyed. Just let him get it out, what he's doing. As long as he's not hurting Remy or bothering, whatever he's not doing, just let him do the physical thing, and then he'll be better to deal with after that. And I've been noticing that a lot lately with him. And I've had to really help try to get better myself about, like, correcting him about some of those things that is just annoying to me and not actually doing anything wrong.
Yeah. And that's what's so tough is, like, my girls fight with each other, but they are more rule followers. And Ike isn't. He does follow the rules, but less. You know what I mean? Like, he does push boundaries. He will say something. And then I heard him mention, like, the other day, something happened and they just all thought Dad was going to be so mad at him. And I wasn't. And I was like, oh, that's okay. It's just an accident. And they didn't know that my reaction would be that way. And there was a little bit of we don't know how Dad's reactions are going to be. Like, we can't totally plot that this means this. And I was, in some ways that might be good. In some ways I was like, oh, I'm not really giving them a complete foundation. And that's a lack of my expectations being delivered to them, so that they feel sometimes like a little bit of chaos because Dad could be super fine or not. He could be really mad at me. And I don't know. Right, I was like, that is kind of unfair to them, because you're right. Like, Ike, he is trying to figure out how to be funny or cool, or he likes jumping into something and that just feels good. You know, in the same way, jumping on the couch or doing something silly or forgetting. I mean, there's zero chance he can remember. They have to wear a lanyard with a card on it now to get into school. And there's even metal detectors. They have metal detectors and everything. And so if you forget your lanyard and ID, you get detention for lunch. You have to just sit by yourself at lunch. And so one day he did it, and I was like, it sucks, because I was like, I should go back and get it for him. And then I was like, no, he has to learn, and that way he'll bring it, because this is the rule. But then I was like, it sucks that that's the rule and that he has to do that, because it just, you know, there was nothing I could do, basically, even if I'd have tried to bring it back or something. But it was just like, he's not intentionally, it's just not bad. Like, whatever good and bad is just not true. It isn't true. I don't believe it anymore. Mm-hmm. And the biggest one to me was, when I think back to how hard Christianity told me to wait to have sex till marriage. And I actually now think that it's really bad. I actually think that's a bad thing. I actually am not going to teach my kids to wait to have sex till marriage. Like, I know that sounds, that's a big one because there's disease and pregnancy, right? Yeah. And all of this stuff. But I'm telling you, it makes no sense that something that apparently is really important because it's always in advertising and always causes issues within relationships. I mean, it's a big issue in relationships, issues that have problems. Sex is usually one of them. It's money. It's jealousy. It's cheating. Sex, you know what I mean? And I was like, huh, I was taught this. And now what I was taught was, if you wait, you'll be doing the right thing for God and it'll be amazing. Except for what other thing, like, what if you waited to play guitar until you were in a band? Would you be a good guitar player? Like, what if you waited to learn about money, but then you were a banker? And then you just figured, I mean, I'm just saying, like, it doesn't even make any sense. And there is no defiling. You are not like I was thinking about it the other day. It really does feel like a man thing that if a woman has sex before marriage, that she's defiled herself. People don't often think about the man defiling himself, but they do think about the woman defiling herself. And I was like, that's just such a, she's property and I want my property to be this way. Or I want my you know what I mean? Like, it really does feel that way. Like, the more and more I think about it, like, it's some kind of ego thing of, no, I got a virgin. You know what I mean? Like, no, she hasn't been touched by another man. She's only mine.
Yeah.
And the more and more I think about it now, I'm like, man, that's just so unfair. I don't want my daughters thinking that way, that they defiled themselves if they had sex, the same way as if they went bowling with the guy. Or how about the other idea is, like, it's totally fine if she's like, I love you so much. You will be my husband one day. We are so in love. You're the only man for me. And then they break up a year later. That's okay, though. But if she would have had sex with the guy, that wasn't okay. Like, that whole idea there just feels very backwards. The whole sex thing in general with religion seems backwards to me.
It's in the category of safetyism overall, because you could then just say, even if you weren't taking that perspective, you have just a general perspective of worry about your kids emotionally. If they had no guardrails or no and they just went out there after puberty and just whatever happened, you could see how they would actually become harmed. If they had no discretion, no ability, no self-esteem, no scaffolding, if they didn't know how to deal with people in life, they already have trouble on the playground. Once those people are having sex with each other, there's be even more harm and damage and bullet. You know what I mean? Like, whatever the stuff there, you can see how it's complicated. And it's just easy. And then it's just easier to say, as a mom, as a parent, it's just all no. That way we're safe.
Right.
So anytime,
but that's lazy on the authorities.
Rigidity becomes like, which do you think we're more likely to be on the spectrum of? Too safe, you know? Like, yes, if you can be, if there's a such thing as too safe, guess what? We tend to index that way,
right?
Like, and at the point where that makes you then unsafe because you've not learned to deal with things, because you said. Been prevented from encountering the dangers. Same with swimming. Right. If you'd wear a life jacket until you're 21, you won't be able to fucking swim.
Right.
Yeah. But you'll be safer.
Right.
Yeah.
You'll be safer. The life jacket. Drown.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is like, it's laziness on the part of the authority figure in that situation.
Yeah.
It's just like, I mean, I still believe that there's something, I do think there's something more to that, to a physical connection than just anything. I mean, I do think there's something more to it. And I think that it is something that maybe is supposed to be a little bit more special.
And it's dangerous. You can get pregnant.
Right.
Because the emotional connection's higher. Yes. The voltage is higher with all that.
But it should be taught. Yeah. You guys are right. I mean, it should be taught as not, don't do this. This is wrong. It should be taught. It'd been amazing if your parents, if the parents could just say, sex is like it's an amazing, beautiful thing. I mean, it is one of the most amazing experiences you can ever have in this life. If your parents had told you that when they first were telling you about sex, they said, I mean, I promise you, it will be an incredible time for you, but there are consequences. if you do this, this could happen. If you do this, this could happen. And under and explaining the whole thing, like, and say, you know, for me, I waited till I got married because I was taught that I was a little afraid, but also maybe it did make my connection with my wife a little bit stronger for the long term. Maybe it didn't. I don't know. But for me, maybe it did. So it'd be nice to really, as a parent, be able to really shape that whole entire, I mean, it is beautiful. I think it's something that is actually amazing and beautiful, of course, that you could tell that to your kids. I mean, my daughter right now, she doesn't have a boyfriend, and she's never, ever wanted to talk to us about any of that. And I've even asked her a couple times. I was like, hey, is there any boys in, you know, junior high that you like talking to, or do you think it's cool or cute or whatever? She's like, no, Dad, no, they're just all really dumb or whatever. And I'm like, okay.
Ruby said.
But I don't want to defile her trust or anything like that, because her and Megan kind of have a book that they read together about the whole thing. Yeah. And it's a nice thing. And instead of having to talk about it, they have like a little notebook that she's like, hey, if you ever feel uncomfortable talking and you want to write something, you can write it. So Megan got something that she wrote the other day, and they kind of share it back. Even though we live in the same house, I know that maybe that seems weird in some ways, but it's also just because it's awkward, you know, to talk about stuff sometimes. And so they kind of been writing back and forth about this little boy who told her he likes her and she kind of likes him. And so it's one of those things for me. I'm like, that is so awesome. Like I'm very happy about it. Like they're not boyfriend and girlfriend, or they're not going to end up together, whatever it is. To me, it's just like, that is just a beautiful part of life that everybody goes through. And sometimes it sucks. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's awesome.
And that's continuous throughout your life. It's not up to that point. Totally. It's okay. And then it becomes not okay until this other technical reality. It's not that.
Yeah, the good and the bad is beautiful.
The good and the bad is just so nice. And I mean, she'll cry. She'll be happy. All these things. But I'm just like, man, that's so cool to just see your kid start to experience those things that you
And you have to allow it to happen. I've been thinking about that more and more. And I'm saying, like, with sex, I'm not like jumping in. Like my kids aren't bringing other kids, other people over, and they're going to start having sex. That ain't happening. I don't care. You know what I mean?
The local sex house.
I'm just saying, I'm not going to teach them that if they wait till marriage, if they don't wait till marriage, they're defiled and sluts or terrible boy or girl. You know, my son,
they get
or my
it
daughter.
Like in a passive way. They can just tell by the way people go, oh, like when you judge other people and say, oh, she's
right,
they go, oh, would I be that? You know, it's a lot of it comes in real passive from the environment. Yeah. I think, have you ever had your kids out there interested in your injuries? Like if you told them, like if you had a scar, you know, and they're like, and you told them the time you broke your leg, have you ever, your kids ever get interested? And they say, what other injuries do you have? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
They love scars and stuff.
Yeah, they love those stories.
Right. So same with the sex ones.
Right.
Like that, like if you said, oh, sex is this, and you're like, when I was 16, this was a really tough time for me because this happened and that happened. Like I broke my knee because I was jumping off the roof, and then it was like crazy, and I had to go to the – like you don't do that about your sex.
Right.
But that's would be natural to do.
Yeah. Well, the other cool thing now, they have so much information. They have so much information thrown at them constantly that they do know a lot. Mm-hmm. But what's really cool is they are also understanding that when they get that information, it is for entertainment purposes. Like somebody might be telling you about themselves sexually or how they play a video game or whatever it might be. But that is like they're trying to get views. They're crafting a story for entertainment purposes. When you tell them, you aren't. Like oftentimes they're like, wait, my dad had a real bad accident and a scar? Whoa, I'd like to hear about that. You know what I mean? Like, because that's a real way. You're not telling them for just entertainment purposes. You're actually telling them as a trusted person about something that really happened, and this is how you went through it. And that's what I always like. I actually really have been enjoying telling my kids, like, I know I'm older, way older than y'all, but I don't even have it figured out. Like, I want to help you, and I do know some things, and I'm going to get some things wrong, but like, it's nice just to talk to them in a way that, like, because I mean, you know, so much has changed for them, even like with the divorce and everything, it's changed so much that it's nice to talk to them and hear their perspective and what they want and why they want things and what they don't know. Like sometimes I let my kids tell me things that are wrong and I don't shut them down. That's been hard, but like, it's like they're wrong. Yeah. But they have like this belief or hope that this is what it is. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to let them have this. Cause if I just go, nah, if I just like shut it down immediately, it doesn't actually allow for creativity or anything. Yep. And who it'll am I anyway?
Maybe I might be wrong. Itself, you're better just because to wait.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if I'm like, yeah, that dude's just terrible. Stay away from him only. But or, you know, or whatever.
Then that,
or,
that doesn't get them the discovery, because that's the same as a preschool thing where you, if a kid is mispronouncing or doing a thing where they say this blue, or like, it's like, no, it's actually turquoise. Like, no.
Right.
They'll figure you don't correct that. Just let them do it wrong until they do it. They're going to do it right.
No, I know.
When they do, it'll be theirs to have figured out. Instead of just told, oh, you don't know stuff. Right. I know stuff, and I told you stuff. So that's how you know stuff, because I told it to you. That's not true.
Right.
It's hard being a parent, though. It just is. I mean, it just is, because, like, you love this motherfucker so much, but they are motherfuckers. I mean, they, in the most way, they are motherfuckers. Like, they want to talk shit to you and make fun of you, and they are trying to one-up you and win.
Absolutely. Like,
especially with,
and don't you want them to?
I actually think, especially
doesn't
with
every
dad.
Parent want their kids to be better? Isn't that the thing the parents always say? I hope they are better than me. Isn't that the point?
No, but they're not just trying to be better than you. They're trying to win. They are trying to beat you at whatever parenting is or kid is.
Right.
They
and think, most parents try to win against their kids for some reason, and they do. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, you're better than your kid. Awesome.
But you're just trying to keep them alive and you alive and get stuff done.
Right. Like, but ultimately, if you zoom out, every parent, even the ones that are shitty and mean, would go, I just wanted them to have a better life. You want them to exceed you. That is the goal.
Oh, sure.
So, and they're trying to exceed you.
Right.
And now you get all butthurt about it.
I know. It just
and punish them. Okay.
Family is so hard because you don't get to choose it. And then sometimes it works out. I mean, if you had to lay a percentage on how close are families compared to friendships? Wouldn't you say friendships are almost always closer than family?
I don't know. I mean, I think that's sketchy territory, but it can be, yeah.
I would say not for my wife and kids, probably. For every other member of my family, yes.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I mean. Maybe just the actual nuclear family or whatever.
I would consider you guys closer to me than my siblings.
Yeah. Right.
No doubt.
But not closer to me than my kids.
Some way.
But that's what I'm saying. At some point, that's what your kids are going to say.
Oh, like, for sure.
Oh, like, yeah. But
you
that's
guys,
what I'm saying. So,
like, you two are closer to me than my parents or my sibling. Yes. But right now, Devin's family is closer. My family's closer.
Right.
But 15 years from now, that's what freaks me out. It's like, we are so close. We're such a close, tight-knit unit right now.
Right.
And then we are going to separate, and we won't be. Right. And I won't know things.
But you have to
be involved.
You have to be okay with that in the same way. Otherwise, you over
it.
It makes this loyalty thing. Like, hey, family's everything. Family's everything. We're in the mob.
I know, but it does. I do feel that way a little bit. Like, it makes me sad thinking my kids aren't going to hang out a bunch.
Well, that's a selfish. Yeah.
They might not talk. Like,
you want
to
limit
them. I don't talk to my brother. Y'all don't talk to your siblings. And I'm like, shit.
On the extreme end of that, you know, it's like parents want to guilt their kids into whatever it is for their own benefit. That's not right.
It's sad. Right, and I understand that's selfish of me. I mean, every parent feels it, and you know it's selfish, but you can't help but feel it.
Well, you have to deal with it and express that honestly, but you don't just do the thing where you say, family's everything, until they go, okay, I guess you know.
Yeah, I don't ever want to guilt my kids into doing something they want to do. I want them to want to, whatever they want to, you know what I mean? So,
yeah. Part of me thinks, man, I just look so forward to like a beach vacation with all three of my kids and their spouses and their kids. And I'm like, man, that whole clan gets together and it'll be fucking wild. And I'll
that's
be
what
happy.
You should work toward, but, and you can earn that. Yeah, and probably that can happen.
That might most likely won't happen. It'll be real hard. And if it happens once a year, maybe.
I think the reason it doesn't happen for a lot of families is because a little bit of bitterness starts to build up in the people, like in the parents. Yeah. A little bitter because the kids don't come as much, and there's probably one kid who's different than the other ones. And that is, you know, so, and it's like, okay, well, I would just say, for me, I know I'm going to get bitter. I'm not saying I'm not going to get bitter, but I want to initiate differently with every one of my kids throughout their life and see. I mean, I would hope that all three of them would always, and I know they won't exactly, but I hope they always view me as the dad they can be close to. And I know they
probably can. I mean, just believe that. But think about it this way. Have you ever heard parents talk about how kids are entitled? Do we hear that ever?
Right.
Like every day, all day. Okay. How about parents being entitled? How pleasant is that?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Like and parents being entitled to, and you will this, and I'll have this. And when I have that, you're not surprised when kids might resist that. Like the parents don't let themselves get called entitled, but that's what it sounds like. I'm bitter that they didn't pay back me because I did all this for them. And who wants to be around that?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's realizing the entitlement that you have as a parent.
I was thinking the other day, I should have just like really pretended to be extremely poor. And like, just like from the time my kids were born, I wish I'd have had them in like a shitty apartment. we ate just like sometimes just ate beans and just, you know what I mean, like really just, and then like all of a sudden, wait, dad's new job, I would have came up with this new job where I had a little bit more money. I'm like, okay, I don't know for sure, but I'm gonna try to get us a house. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do it. It's good. Please, dad, you know, like if they could have seen some struggle, you know what I mean, but I didn't even have the struggle. It's amazing the time we live in. Like it just didn't. No, I know it's not great all around the world, but I'm just talking about at least in the time that I've lived in as an American. Maybe it's been just pretty wild and easy. Like I don't want to forget about that. Like I see my kids sometimes, and I'm like, whoa, they don't even know like the things that they think are bad, like aren't as scary as the things like when I was growing up. I literally there was a time where I was like, we're fucked. Russia's going to send a nuclear bomb here. Like, I mean, like, you know, during the Cold War of the 80s and stuff, like I was a kid thinking the world isn't safe, but I don't know if my kids think that way necessarily. They think the world might not be safe, but it's nowhere near them. And their big issues are mostly like relational and emotional and mental. You know what I mean? Like those are the big things. Like they've never had to worry about a meal, not having a meal, or never worried about, wait, I have to go to war, or I have to fight for my country, or I have to, you know, work two jobs just to get, you know, it just hasn't happened. And so I do wonder what that does. Even like the worst thing that ever happened to them during their lifetime was COVID. And I meant was stay at your nice air conditioned heated house. You know, with food, and dad has to wear a mask and run, you know, get around Costco real quick so he doesn't get that disease. You know, you know, I mean, like that was the worst thing that ever happened to him. And it really was bad. Like relatively, it was really bad. Like I think it was really terrible. The whole COVID way we handled it and everything was just horrific. But I do wonder what it'll look like the more the world changes, and what if it is going to get worse. Like we're just in some kind of weird timeline. Like I believe my life was probably the best. I hope I live to, let's say I live to 80. I think that's the best 80 years in human history I got to live in. I believe that. I don't think it's going to get better for humans. Like there'll be, oh, you can fix your broken leg immediately with this machine, or you know, there'll be other things. But I got to experience no computers in the home, and four channels on the TV, and a landline, and parents trying to work out stuff the best they can without any guidance at all. And all the way to AI, probably within 5 years being God. And I did, like, I got to experience all of it. And I just feel like this is the best time in history overall. It's the best medical care. It's the best where people are trying to improve and they're listened to. Like, you used to, people tried to improve things and nobody gave a shit and listened to them or just killed them. But now people, at least you can be listened to. You know what I mean? Like, even like, I've been seeing all these, pro-Palestine marches that are stopping traffic and doing all that. And I was like, this is interesting because it's pissing people off trying to get to work and all that stuff. But they're being seen and it's really, there's not really any bad consequences by them standing up for what they believe in. Even if people disagree with them or not, I was just like, man, this is a crazy time that I live in that's about as safe as it can be. And it's still scary. And I know something bad's coming, but even a world pandemic happened in my lifetime. And it was fascinating to watch how everybody handled it and how people are still handling it. I mean, at the elementary schools, there's tons of kids that wear masks still. When I'm subbing, lots of masks. And I was like, whoa. They just want to wear a mask. These kids aren't really, they're not worried about COVID. Kids don't, you know what I mean? Like, the kids don't ever worry about sickness. That's why they get sick all the time. They don't wash their hands enough. They don't, you know, they don't care about it. They actually are, like, there's some kids that are wearing masks so they can hide their face because their face is one of the things that matters most to them. That is the most, like, scariest, detrimental, the thing they're most insecure about, whatever it might be. So if they can wear a mask, they go, oh, I don't have to be seen. And I was like, wow, that's a lot. And that like, so all the things that they're going to experience probably will be even different than us. Like, I don't even know if there's going to be a world war, but there will be stuff like that, like, cripples you because it's you and you're vulnerable. I don't know.
Heard that.
Let's get off of here. Fuck it. Let's get the fuck off of here. Kids, am I right?
That's funny.